Yesterday was Tuesday, which makes today. Yes, it is Big News Wednesday with me, John Irola, back in LA, and JR Jackson. Welcome back to the show, JR.
What's going on there, Iderola? I'm going on a record break. I'm going like a marathon run of shows right now. I have a nice comfortable new studio. I think I'm gonna put a couch in the corner so I can just sleep here.
That's more a good comfortable idea. That way. That's a good idea. Early on in the pandemic, that studio wasn't being used. It was often dark. So sometimes in the middle of the day, I would sleep on the floor. That's some behind the scenes info for you. I do like your new studio. I think I just saw a ghost walk in front of the camera, possibly. Hey, I don't know if
listen,
that happened.
We got character here in this studio. I invite all energies and spirits because we just like to make the news go around in here. That's all there is to it, bro.
Exactly.
I did do election coverage last night in John's place. And just in case you guys want to know about this, when it comes to following races, John makes it look easy. That's not an easy job to do.
It's not that difficult, but I do enjoy it. I do enjoy it. I sometimes like to pretend that I'm Steve Kornacki. It's my thing and I'm sticking with it. Okay, well, speaking of which, we will be getting into election results in just a little bit. Not everything, but there are a few specific points that, come on, I'm not gonna talk about a few of these developments, many of which I found waiting for me when my plane landed in LA. I'd spent basically all of yesterday traveling, and I'm a little bit jet lagged and a little bit loopy, so that's gonna be fun. Everyone get ready for that. During the social breaks, I'm gonna talk a little bit about some stuff that happened at the Webbies. That's why I was in New York. Also, I wanna thank Francesca Fiorentini for being an awesome fill-in host for the past few days. Anna Kasparian for jumping on the show on Monday, Dan Evans on Tuesday. They're all awesome. Definitely go and follow them. You can see Francesca on the Bituation Room and the Twituation Room. So I look forward to that. In addition to election results, we've got a lot to talk about, including absolutely horrendous statistics when it comes to pollution. Turns out the environment is important and it should be protected. Also, like you may think that, like, I like certain foods, like I like Pop-Tarts or whatever. We have found a guy who likes his favorite food more than anyone else in the world likes their favorite food. And we're gonna be closing out the show with that later on. So everyone, stay tuned for that along the way. If you're on a platform that allows for things like liking this stream, hey, that'd be great. Give it a try. You might like it. And if you wanna send us any tweets, super chats, comments, questions about the Webbies or whatever, which celebrities did I rub shoulders with? You can ask and I'll respond during the breaks. But with that said, JR, are you ready to do this thing?
I'm excited about the celebrities, bro. Let's just jump straight to that.
Nope, you gotta wait. It's gonna happen in the breaks. By the way, this is the return that I have. I come back finally to show and someone's like, why does John look so tired? Thanks. Thank you, everybody. Anyway, with that said, why don't we do this thing? Last night was a number of different state primaries, and what do you know? Some wins for the left. Notably, we're gonna start with John Fetterman, who won fairly easily against Connor Lamb. You can see the results right there. So look, John Fetterman had been leading for some time, despite going up against a candidate that had a lot of different endorsements from the Democratic establishment and Joe Manchin and all that stuff. Along the way, Connor Lamb's supporters decided that the best way to win new voters was to argue with people via text messages. That's a great strategy. But no, Fetterman won, producing that holy purple map, and he will now be the candidate in that particular race. We don't know exactly who he's gonna be going up against. We will talk about that a little bit later on. But JR, I'm sure you guys got into this on the election coverage last night. Fetterman is a pretty interesting figure, different than other candidates. Judging by his overall size, possibly a different species than other candidates. He's a big dude. But he more closely lines up with the left on a number of different issues. I've read, and I hadn't seen this before, that he actually doesn't describe himself or call himself progressive, which I think is interesting. But his positions in terms of things like Medicare for all and marijuana legalization, everything is much more in line with the left. So that is exciting. Coming off of a couple of primary nights where the left basically lost all of our elections. Good news there in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't realize that he doesn't call himself a progressive or a liberal, one of the two.
A progressive specifically is what I had read. I hadn't noticed that, but that's only because you don't often notice the absence of something, I suppose.
Right, and honestly, it should be the kind of the way it goes when it comes to people's broad spectrum of political beliefs and what they think the country is. Once the labels hit, then people just assume everything the person believes or thinks. And many times they'll be right, because if they get outside of it, suddenly they're no longer within that label. If we could shed those, which I think is pretty much impossible, maybe we'll be better off. Maybe that's just one positive form as well. But when it comes to last night, as far as him winning, also he had the stroke. I'm not sure if you're getting to as well. He had the stroke, he was in the hospital. All these things happened to him, but he's still there to win from that point. And I think it was Francesca last night did point out, maybe it was Anna. I can't remember what point of the night this was anymore. But that his wife then also came out and spoke very powerfully about the things that he's fighting for and the things that actually help people. And honestly, maybe this stint in the hospital, his healthcare issues and things that he's gotten help from, and being in that position of having that, it allows him to have this moment to speak about, hey,
sure,
this is what most Americans maybe don't have the ease of getting access to if it happens to them. A stroke is not just something that happens randomly. It happens to a lot of people, and if either to them or someone that they know. So it helps.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. Yeah, and I know the Lamb campaign tried to use that in the last days. Come on, seriously, like, it would be bad enough to win that way, but to lose that way, you stupid losers. Anyway.
Well, this is the question, also, John. Like, is this establishment wing of the Democratic Party gonna then back him? They kind of have to, especially with the shellacking. What is it? I'm damn near 60%.
Yeah, no, he won by hundreds of thousands of votes. We'll see. I mean, again, we're going to debate later on, you know, who might end up being the candidate who goes against him. It's a little bit up in the air right now. Theoretically, the Democrats shouldn't like any of those. So, like him or not, it's now your duty, your obligation, and in your pragmatic political interest to back him if you're the Democratic establishment. So, hopefully that will happen. That said, some are worried about his chances once it goes to the general election. And you know, they're only speaking in total good faith, worried about Democrats. Here is an example of one, Chris Wallace.
While his authenticity and down to earthness, if there's such a phrase, played very well in the Democratic primary, you get to a general election, particularly if you end up with a moderate like Dave McCormick, there are a lot of things that the Republicans are gonna have to work with in going after John Fetterman. This is a guy who is against limits on abortion. He's for universal background checks. He wants to end the filibuster. He wants to legalize pot.
Okay, so I am not saying that there are not policies that John Fetterman has or could have that you couldn't use against him. I don't know literally every position he has. It's entirely possible that there's areas where I disagree with him. But if you're gonna say specifically that he has these positions that are so out of the mainstream that's ooh, now it's scary for the general, you're gonna have to come with some other examples than that. He talked about universal background checks. Poll from just last year showed 88% of voters, specifically in Pennsylvania, support them. Did he Google it? Did he even care to? And by the way, this race is to replace outgoing Senator Pat Toomey, who sponsored the universal background check legislation. So not only is it incredibly popular, but this would just be a continuation of the position of the outgoing senator. You have for marijuana legalization, that's a little bit more controversial, but it is the plurality position. Only about 1 out of 3 voters in Pennsylvania don't think it should be legalized. Some people aren't sure. I would say, you know, catch up, it's 2022, seriously. At least have a position. If your position is it's gonna be reefer madness and the kids are all gonna lose it, okay, be crazy like that. But to say, I don't know if it's deadly or not, that seems like a dereliction of your intellectual duty. And the fact that he would get rid of the filibuster, well, look, we understand how frustrated people are about the lack of the Senate's ability to do anything. Is this really gonna turn them off? I don't know. And the fact that he doesn't support limits on abortion, Chris Wallace is looking at the furor people are in over what's happening with Roe v. Wade and thinks that being more on the side of reproductive rights is a dangerous position to be in going into these midterms, JR.
Yeah, well, somehow we're still buying into the whole moderate thing, because he pointed out, oh, he's gonna go up against a bit more of a moderate Republican. What is a moderate Republican? What
type of positions.
Yeah, it really stop and ask yourself that, because we just automatically have this knee jerk reaction, say, well, he's the moderate, that means he's more electable. Why? Why? But in the very next breath, we'll say, look how divided the country is. Everyone's going further and further into their own corners. So is it moderate? It sounds like the moderates have the least chance, because the people that are getting elected from the Republican Party, at least, are not moderates. They are extremists. They're radicals, but they're being called just MAGA, which is now the norm of the party. A moderate Republican now is basically a Bush Republican, which is a bad thing. If people forget, Bush started the wars that everyone was talking about and had an issue with and ended in Afghanistan and in Iraq, which was done wrong. That's a moderate Republican now. Ones who don't want people to openly say we're going to turn flip the government upside down and have a dictator. That's a moderate Republican now. And that's going to be someone who's more electable than someone who actually fights for people's rights and things that people should have access to. It's really weird how that's what we're discussing now.
Yeah, 100%. And also, I'm not going to go off on a whole long thing, but just in case we have new new viewers, I want them to start to question things. What the hell is a moderate supposed to be anyway? What is a centrist supposed to be? I understand that people just accept that, because you've heard exactly, that's what it means. It means that they are in favor of the way things are, the status quo that benefits them, they'll continue it. Regardless of whether or not the status quo is itself extreme, insane, unequal, leaving millions and millions of people behind. It's a crazy thing to continue it. If you simply continue it, you get to be the moderate. It's so nice of them that they do PR work for you. Just like the New York Times will just write, this candidate's a moderate. This one's crazy, this one's a moderate. That's just objective reporting, according to them. Anyway, Chris Wallace not coming with a whole lot of evidence right there. But if you'd like more, I guess, evidence-free, fact-free commentary, he's got a show coming on CNN soon. He was supposed to be on CNN Plus, that evaporated. He whined and now he's got a show. CNN, the left-wing news outlet with Chris Wallace.
He's a moderate.
Anyway, he's a moderate, that is true. He's a centrist, really, he's better than us. I feel a little radical. Anyway, with all that said, Fetterman's win, we'll have more to talk about, wasn't the only one. Let's jump into this video to talk about some more. That is Summer Lee, who I was prepared to come on the show today and say appears like she won her primary, but no, now it's declared Summer Lee actually won, beating Steve Irwin. Jerry Dickinson was also in the race. It was a close one, not close in terms of the amount of support that Steve Irwin was getting from a number of different sources. So much money being poured into this race. Mm-hmm. In less than a month, the United Democracy Project, with a name like that, you know it's got to have your best interest at heart, poured more than $1 million into ads in this one congressional race. The bulk of the messaging attacked Lee. 100,000 went to materials supporting Irwin. It is not Steve Irwin, the nature guy, just to be clear, it's a different Steve Irwin. Anyway, United Democracy Project spent $2.3 million and they lost. Imagine what good you could have done with that. But anyway, Summer Lee was incredibly fired up there as a strong progressive. And you can see that from the video. If you've been following her, you know that. You can also tell that based on how much money they spent to stop her. This was effectively them trying to do to Summer Lee what they did to Nina Turner. In this case, though, they very narrowly failed, JR. And that is certainly good news for the left.
Yeah, I mean, look, it shows the playbook. That was the whole idea. And it's also reasons why you'll see when anyone wants to challenge money in politics, the way we give donations, the way we let corporations run rampant when it comes to representing folks and buying folks off and having them only do their bidding, we see why it's so important to them. Because if they don't have that, what do they have? All they have is a candidate that has to actually talk about the things that they want to do and if that actually helps people. And the people that they have to speak to are the ones that are actually given the money and they then have to answer to them. If you don't have that aspect, you have to actually be a real representative. You have to actually campaign for folks' actual rights and things that they want because they're paying you to do so. And the way we have it now is, look, just let these folks pay everyone else off and they can act like they're gonna represent people on the campaign trail. And once they're in, they can give him a big fat middle finger and move on and go back to trying to represent the folks that paid to get them in. $2.3 million on this 12th district race. There's a reason why that she's fired up, and so am I. Hopefully this will be a sign. I doubt it. I'm the cynic here. Hopefully there's a sign to the Democratic Party that despite all that spending, the people just might get the folks that they want every once in a while. And this is going to start rolling downhill.
Yeah, not nearly enough. And
so you want to win. It's like couple the money with actual policy and you might actually win on a larger scale. Sorry, John.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, that 2.3 million would be, you know, helpful in the primary. I'm going to look up how 12th district went last time. Maybe it's a shoe and I don't know, but it's good to have Summerlee. We need these wins. If you watching this were around for the last primary night that I covered, it was a rough one, you know, with Nina losing and other good progressives losing. And it's easy to get very depressed. I know Cenk was about as down as I've seen him electorally. It was kind of rough even just sitting there. This is what we need and this is what we're getting. And so we've mentioned a few wins. There were others. Charles Booker, who I've spoken with, he went on to, it was easy. You know, he absolutely destroyed the competition. He's going to be going up against Rand Paul. That is going to be an incredibly difficult race. So let's just be clear about that. But Charles Booker looks like he's going to fight and that's what we need. There are others too. We can't catalog all of the races, but Jamie McLeod Skinner had a bunch of money put against him in support of Kurt Schrader, who voted against the coronavirus relief package and also helped destroy Build Back Better. So of course the Democratic establishment put a bunch of money into trying to get him to beat Jamie McLeod Skinner. You had Andreas Salinas. I don't know if that's been like definitively called at this point, but appears likely to win. A bunch of crypto money went into another race to try. Like there was so much money flowing around. And again, it's why I always say like the Democrats in the face of Republicans are like, what can we do? I don't know how to respond to this. I don't know how to campaign, but against a progressive, they tear their spine out and then they beat them with it. Now, thankfully in this case, they were able to dodge the spine attacks. And so some of the leftists won, but they know how to fight when it's fighting to their left.
We talked to Charles Booker last night on the coverage, and he specifically pointed out how he said, we're going to beat Rand Paul. He's going to get blown out. I was like, talk the talk, Charles. And he said the way that he would pull that off is actually calling out names, pointing out his corruption, pointing out who he really is. Because as they've canvassed and talked and got this support, the number of people that talk about the things that they actually want, they will then relay those things and point out how in opposition to that Rand Paul just really is. And maybe even he's looking across over with the many Republicans, the conservatives want the same things. And we know this, stuff. We're talking about how the general American public doesn't realize conservatives want the same things. And when a progressive talks about things to do for the American people, it's not just for Democratic voters or progressives or libs, it's for the people. And eventually maybe they'll figure that out. He has an uphill climb, but I like his approach so far. He's interesting, call him and put his name to his policies.
Okay, I was getting a fact check. Apparently, did I refer to Jamie McLeod Skinner as a he? I apologize. It's a she. Apologies for that. Like I said, brain fog. I apologize.
She was great last night too. She's pointing out the way that she's gonna approach things too, and it appears to be working again.
You actually spoke with Jamie on the coverage.
It's great.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay, I'm gonna have to watch that.
Yeah, I
would have been there for the coverage, but obviously I got in after 9 and that's unfortunate. I hate missing even one election night, but I will be there next week. I believe is going to be Texas as well, some other states. That's a very significant one too. Fingers crossed it's more like this week than it was like a couple weeks ago.
The sexual perversion that goes on in Washington. I mean, then all of a sudden you get invited to like, well, hey, we're gonna have kind of a sexual get together at one of our homes. You should come. And I'm like, and then you realize they're asking you to come to an orgy.
Yeah.
Or the fact that, you know, there's some of the people that are leading on the movement to try and remove, you know, addiction in our country. And then you watch them do, you know, a key bump of cocaine right in front of you. Now, this video is just stupid locker room talk between two cousins that grew up like brothers.
I'd like to see a naked body beneath my hands.
Me too. I'd like to see that as well. Yeah. now confirming the North Carolina Congressman Madison Cawthorn has been cited for bringing a loaded gun to the Charlotte airport today. This is according to the TSA and to police.
This article is pushing a ludicrous narrative that I'm some kind of drag queen on the side, not exactly the same journalistic standards as Fox or Newsmax.
That's a weird aside at the end. Anyway, that's Madison Cawthorn, congressman for now, because he actually lost his primary. We got one, not the one that I would have picked or for any of the reasons that I would have picked. That little mashup, which Brett Ehrlich did a great job in putting together, was just to remind you of a few of the things that the right has come at him over. The weird videos and stuff like that. The gun thing, that's really on him. The driving with a suspended license, the punching a tree and everything. He did a lot of weird stuff, JR, and he's a genuinely bad guy. Let's be clear about that. He deserves to be booted out of government and never allowed back in for a lot of reasons that there doesn't seem to be much evidence actually hurt him. But he was hurt and he did lose. And so that is good news. We should stop for a second and acknowledge that in not too many more months, we will no longer have to deal with Madison Cawthorn, at least for now.
Yeah, so a couple of things here. So first of all, he's going to continue to blame Democrats as these things were happening, as this evidence and embarrassing videos and accounts came trickling out, as he called it, the drip, drip, drip came out. Bad choice for words for him there. But he was claiming it's Democrats, when in reality it was people that were sick of him. Now, we point out how the establishment Republicans, or maybe just people who wanted to stop having that distraction there, were potentially doing this stuff to him and set him up. But what was the reason? It wasn't just that they did it and therefore it seemed to do him in, but they were upset about other things he was doing. So it was the public things he was doing. They were like, we got to get rid of this guy. Maybe it was the DUIs. Maybe it was the way he's talking about the key bump of cocaine off of a hooker's butt. I don't know what it is that actually pushed him to that point. It definitely wasn't the fact that he continued to follow Donald Trump and parrot everything he was saying and talk about the violence he's going to have against his political opponents. Yep. And I don't want to have to pick up a gun and actually kill people. Hey, mothers, raise your children to be monsters. Yes, he said that. All those things didn't bother them as much as probably that line about what Republicans and I guess what he says his colleagues do in Washington, D.C., but it did him in. And now the next question, my second part about this is, what's next? And I mentioned it earlier on my show, what, a podcast? Is he going to continue to spew these lies? Or, as Anna and Jenk hoped last night, will he spill the tea? Name names.
I mean, I look. Maybe the question, there are many questions. One of the fundamental questions is the stuff about the parties and the cocaine or whatever. Was any of that based in truth? If so, how much? What, or was he just wildly exaggerating, or was he making up the entire thing? Because which of those is the truth will influence what he has to say coming out now. Aside from that, was he on the in enough to really know much? I mean, he got into office. He didn't legislate. Like, he wasn't involved in any of their efforts in terms of policy. He mostly spent his time going on Fox News, going on podcasts, trying to be cool. I have no doubt that he's readying, you know, the album cover art for his podcast already at this point. And he's going to want to say stuff to get people to follow him. But will any of it be based in truth? Will he, like, if he just outright lies about them, could that even possibly hurt him? I honestly have no idea at this point. It does seem bizarre that, as weird as the comment about the cocaine and the orgies and all that was, that you would do so much to take him down based on that. I think that was more so just the straw that broke the camel's back. I think he was seen as a needless distraction. I think he was seen as a loose cannon. Marjorie Greene and Lauren Boebert are every bit as crazy, if not crazier than him, and every bit as, you know, totally accepting of fascism, white supremacy, all that. But they targeted all their fire outside of the party. Mm-hmm. Marjorie Greene, generally, she targets everything, common sense, rationality. Madison Cawthorn didn't seem to have the correct targeting in mind for that. And maybe it wasn't so much about the comments that we saw, it was their fear that, well, what's he going to be saying in a year or two, you know? Maybe it's all preemptive damage control.
Yeah, maybe they read the political winds, because again, Mark Meadows was kind of his mentor even when he's just getting in office, and he kind of abandoned him a bit there even from the beginning. So maybe they just saw where this was going, and maybe they determined how much of a self-serving person Madison could be, and that's still the degree. How much is he self-serving that he's willing to detach from these people who assisted him get in the position, but then also potentially seem to get him booted out? Is he bitter, or is he like, I need to ingratiate myself further? That's really the question. No one knows, and it'll tell what he does next.
Yeah, well, we're gonna talk about next steps in a sec, but we do have a little bit more of some of what he got up to during his time. Consider this a bit of his political in memoriam, at least for now. Here's what Brett Ehrlich stitched together for us.
Your left-wing movement is forcing children to endure radical expressions of sexuality. Science is not Burger King. You can't just have it your way.
Because Dr. Fauci knows he's been working as a pawn of the Chinese Communist Party.
Eternal souls woven into earthen vessels, sanctified by Almighty God and endowed with the miracle of life, are denied their birth by a nation that was born in freedom.
Take notes, Madam Speaker. I'm about to define what a woman is for you. XX chromosomes, no tallywhacker. It's so simple.
It's so simple. This is honestly, like, if I was maybe not Ben Shapiro, but if I was one of the second or third order clones of Ben Shapiro, I'd be worried, because just unleash that guy on a microphone. He is every bit as crazy, dumb, and confident as all of them. Like, why would someone listen to Charlie Kirk when they can listen to this guy? He's more enthusiastically ignorant than even Charlie Kirk can manage. And he has more interesting, he's willing to talk about the cocaine parties. Charlie Kirk keeps that part a little bit quiet, a little bit hush hush. So anyway, I think he is likely to go into right wing media, which is effectively the exact same thing as being a Republican congressman at this point. The question for you, JR, is will he run again? Will he run for Congress? Will he possibly try to become a senator next time?
That's
crazy. He's still very young.
No, that's crazy, man. It's crazy only because I never even imagined that was a possibility. And I guess
my answer is
based in there's no possibility. How? Who's gonna back him? Who's gonna support him? They just ran his ass out. Like, are they gonna now re-up an entire campaign to help him? They don't want to do it for Donald Trump, but they're doing it just because they have no other choice, because he's their master. They hate Donald Trump more than they probably hate this guy, but they're pushing because he's got that much influence. Now, Madison was trying to be a kingmaker. He had some endorsements. He was trying to be a miniature Donald Trump within his own state. And I think last I heard, his couple of endorsements were doing decently last night. I still don't know who they are. Sorry, apologies for that. Mm-hmm. But I just don't think they think he's worth it. You'd have to think that he's worth it. And Lindsey Graham outlines exactly how he feels about Trump and how he's a disaster, but he's worth it because he's generated enough of their racist base to keep all of them in power. They have no use for Madison Cawthorn anymore.
I will simply say this. I do not think we have seen the last of Madison Cawthorn.
I think politically speaking, but not politically in office.
Okay, well, perhaps we should have a bet.
What's your basis? We'll talk about it. Why do you think this is possible?
Because he's effectively like every other one of them. He is just entitlement. Like, he's entitlement with a quaff. That's all it is. You think this dude is just gonna go like get a regular job or whatever after this? No, he is tapped in. He wants to continue. He wants to chase that high. Maybe not in an orgy, but he wants to chase that high. And so I think he will. Along the way, by the way, I do want to give him this. The guy has already made history multiple times. First, on his way in, he was the youngest person ever elected to Congress. And now he has made history again. He is the youngest Republican ever to lose a primary election after being the incumbent. So congratulations for you. And with that, we just have to formally say goodbye. So to the director, can we jump to the last graphic, actually? Because I'm not that great with words. And so I want to say something inspiring towards him. I'm not so good. I'm actually go with one of his classic quotes. Cry more, lib. I almost swore.
I know it.
I'm just going to say that. What a jackass. I can say that, right?
We know what you were going to say. And I'm glad you were going to say it. The only thing is that was stuck out to me about that tweet from 2020 when he won. He's speaking to one particular lib. I just don't know who he's talking to. It's not cry more libs. It's cry more lib.
I don't know. There's one. By the way,
it's a special lib.
I just going to finally say. So we know he's like he wanted to go see the Eagle's Nest and the Furins, his bucket list and everything. So like, think about all the crazy, racist, insane, violent things this guy said when he thought he had to run for re-election. Hold on to your butts for what he says now that he's unleashed. He is gonna be unrefined. Anyway, with that said, he is hardly the only crazy. Unfortunately, he's the one who lost. We have others that actually won. So let's transition into this now. Doug Mastriano is gonna be the Republican nominee for governor of Pennsylvania. Now, why is this bad? Well, it's bad for a lot of different reasons. You can see there, he got the endorsement from President Trump. Hardly a good thing from our point of view, a guy that Trump was enthusiastic about. We're gonna get to some different aspects of Mastriano. He's a bad guy, but one that really is gonna matter if he wins and is the governor when the 2024 presidential election happens, can be summed up from a little clip. Let's go to this thumbnail, this tweet, I should say. We're not gonna play the actual video for you because you can barely make out what he's saying, but some, like one douchebag is interviewing this other douchebag who just won. And he says 20 electoral votes. That's what he'll be delivering. And Mastriano says, yeah. What does that mean? That means he's going to deliver the electoral votes of Pennsylvania if he is the governor. What does that mean? Doesn't it depend on who the Republican nominee is, how they run, how the people vote? No, to Mastriano, none of that actually matters. Because if you recall back in 2020 as a state senator, he said this: there's mounting evidence that the Pennsylvania presidential election was compromised. If this is the case under blah, 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 the state legislature has the sole authority to direct the manner of selecting delegates to the electoral college. This power was given to the state legislature for the purpose of safeguarding the appointment of our president, specifically contemplating corruption and ensuring that the people are not disenfranchised through a corrupt election process. What does that mean? He wanted to decertify Joe Biden as the winner in Pennsylvania and just have the Republican state legislature, which Pennsylvania has, choose their own electors. So he decided, oh, we lost. It would be better if we won. So I think we're gonna win. And now he's not gonna be a state senator potentially. If he goes on and wins in the general election, it's not guaranteed. He's gonna be going up against, I believe it's Josh Shapiro, right? That he's going up against, I believe. In any event, he'll be in charge potentially. He'll be choosing people who will be involved in this. He can potentially override the vote. And as we'll get to in a little bit, he is not the only person that might be in that sort of position. So this is very much something to be worried about. JR, what do you think about Mastriano? You're muted, by the way.
Jeez. So Mastriano and that whole line about how he's gonna be this sole person who can appoint the delegates and electorate to the sole authority to direct the manner of selecting delegates to the Electoral College. So he gets to choose himself, openly saying this. First of all, there's lots of underlining meanings behind even these types of statements that these politicians like to make. First of all, that you believe your party sucks so much that you're gonna lose. You're saying it right now. We're gonna lose naturally, and we're gonna lose in a fair process. So good thing I'm here to make sure that we don't lose. Sounds like you're calling your parties a bunch of losers and have positions that people really don't want to vote for. Why isn't the claim when we get to when I get in the governor's mansion, people are gonna love what we do so much that they're gonna vote for us every cycle. We're never gonna lose this seat again. Why is that not the case? Because they don't care about what people think. They don't care about what voters think. The whole thought process is, I'm gonna get in office and I'm gonna fix it. That's the reason why I guess they still, honestly, I didn't think they really believed that the election was fixed. I thought they were just saying that because Donald Trump said so. But people like him actually believe it. And it's because when they're in power, they would do exactly what is it they're saying that their political opponents are doing, because they're corrupt. Corrupt people only know corruption. There's no fairness. There's no normal democracy in this guy's mind. What is that? We fix elections here because that's what I would do, because I know my policies suck. That's what he's telling everyone right now.
100%. In the same way that all of the right-wing media is like, the Democrats are importing new voters. They're gonna replace. They just bring these people in and then those are automatic votes for them. They don't fill in the blank, which is, because even if this was happening, which isn't, insane racist theory, they'll never vote for us. Why would anyone do that? They completely tell them themselves. And they're doing that in this too. You would not be electing people whose sole appeal is that they will fix the vote for you if you thought you could win. Now, to be fair, the right is generally not very good at self-analysis, critically looking at themselves. And in this case, they seem to be able to do that. They have looked at the evidence over the past 3 decades. Republicans effectively never win the popular vote for president. So yeah, I would prioritize cheating too if I was them, and they are doing that. Mastriano won, effectively only campaigning on the fact that he believes the big lie, and he's not the only one. In Arizona, the leading candidate to be the Republican gubernatorial nominee is Carrie Lake, who was asked if she would have certified Arizona's election in 2020, said hell no. In Michigan, the leading GOP candidate for governor said, I don't know if I would have told Trump that I would have certified the results. So he's at least not sure if he would have, you know, gone along with democracy. In Wisconsin, Rebecca Clefitch, she won't say whether she would have certified it. So who knows? Seems important. I would press her for an answer, but we don't know. And by the way, Pennsylvania, Arizona, Michigan, Wisconsin, you know what those all are? Swing states, important states in presidential elections, and they have gone all in on, we're going to get people that are going to make what we tried to do in 2020 work the next time. And they might actually be able to do it. And if it happens, like let's say, jump ahead. Me and Cenk and Anna and Francesca and JR are doing election coverage, and well, I guess this would have been like a month later. They're not gonna accept the results. So what's gonna happen then? The Democrats are gonna like fight hard against it. The media is gonna band together and say that this is unacceptable. The Supreme Court is gonna make them go along with the Constitution, with the law. Those are our shields, supposedly. I would argue they're phantom shields. I don't think that they actually exist. And so we're years out. And so I understand that, like, maybe you think, let's just focus on the now, but I already feel it in my gut that this is what we're racing towards. If the election is even somewhat close in 2024, they're gonna pull the 2020 playbook again. And this time they're gonna have way more people in the field to make it happen.
Well, you talk about being years out, and we were years out from other things when Donald Trump came in office, or even before he was in office, and Mitch McConnell was trying to make sure that certain folks were on the Supreme Court, or the certain folks were not on the Supreme Court. They were, as long as they were nominated by a Democratic president, that they were not on the Supreme Court. And that led to where we are now with this draft memo and Roe versus Wade. So when we talk about what's years out, that shouldn't be something that makes us go, well, let's wait and see. It's happening right now. The infrastructure is being put in place to allow that outcome, just like the infrastructure was being put in place as far as the Supreme Court and the nominees, to put in place to where we've now gotten, where eventually, I guess this summer, they're gonna go ahead and vote that down, and we have that battle on our hands. So there's no way to overestimate the potential disaster that someone like this could be, and we should call it out at every moment. So again, if this guy has a problem with the election process, doesn't that mean his election last night was fraudulent? This is the same state that you said doesn't do fair elections. And if it was fair, fine, I'm sure he'll say that. What is it that happened last night with the election process that's not gonna happen in November, since you already are calling that it's gonna be corrupt? What is it that's already changed? Is it just naturally changed just because you got elected? These questions don't get asked because people are too busy nodding their heads or going, I can't believe he's gonna do this. Ask him how this works. It's a very easy question to ask. He's not gonna answer it, but it's just how, Doug? How? He can't tell you because he's lying.
Really fast, just one or two quick more things. Sophie, it's gonna be okay. Super fast. Dr. Oz, his race, it's super close. Dr. Oz will probably end up being the winner over Dave McCormick, who is the like the Republican establishment anti-Trump or whatever that matters in terms of policy candidate. So we will see what happens with that. By the way, the advice that Donald Trump has provided to Dr. Oz was on Truth Social, which he's now on. We taunted him so much that he's now actually truthing. Said Dr. Oz should declare victory. It makes it much harder for them to cheat with the ballots that they just happened to find. He's like admitting there that he doesn't think he actually won. Anyway, by the way, credit to the graphics team. I put that in super late. I didn't expect them to get it. So thank you for getting that. But yeah, he's just like, you just declare, they'll let you do it. First of all, it makes it way harder for them to cheat. Dude, you tried to do that. Are you in the White House right now? Apparently it doesn't make it that much harder to cheat because you lost still. And by the way, super last thing. There's been a question for some time to Republican voters. Do you consider yourself to be a supporter of Donald Trump or a supporter of the Republican Party, okay? The percent that say they're a supporter of Donald Trump rather than the Republican Party is at 34%. That is the lowest it's ever been since they've been asking that. The support of the GOP is at 58%. That's the highest. So he's still obviously important or whatever, but it's the lowest level. That is like, we're looking at that very briefly. You know who is staring at that and salivating? Ron DeSantis. Ooh, he's considering running against Trump. Can you imagine the debates? There's a possibility that one of them will actually drop their pants, because it's going to get wilder than 2016. You can guarantee that. Anyway, with that said, Sophie might well have a stroke if I don't go to break. So we're going to go to break and then talk about some stuff that doesn't have anything to do with the election. It's interesting, though. So I'll see you on the other side. Okay, so that was fun and wacky. And don't worry, coming up on the other side of the hour break, we got more wackiness for you. In fact, coming up fairly soon, we got some wackiness. But let's get serious for a little bit. The rest of the world still exists, and it's kind of in a bad way. So let's talk about that now. A new study has revealed the massive cost in terms of lives and money done to America and to the world, thanks to things like pollution from the generation and use of fossil fuels, big factories, stuff like that. What would we get if we were to move beyond that, to decarbonize our economy? Well, it turns out there would be a lot of benefits. Specifically, they might prevent over 50,000 premature deaths and save $608 billion in associated benefits annually. This is from decarbonizing just the US economy, by the way, 50,000 deaths. Now, in light of the pandemic, maybe people don't prioritize that number of lives as much as they would have in years past, but it seems significant. It seems worth fighting for. So let's give you a little bit more of what was found. This is a study published earlier this week in the journal GeoHealth. The University of Wisconsin-Madison's Nelson Institute for Environmental Studies looked at what happens as a result of the carbon emissions from the electric power, transportation, building, and industrial sectors. And that, by the way, accounts for about 90% of the greenhouse gas emissions. Although they do note that there is a substantial portion of pollution that comes from wood and bark burning. I had not expected that. Obviously, wildfires are a big issue, and there are people who consume those sorts of things for energy as well. But you can get a big portion of the way to decarbonization, specifically with those industries. Yeah, they found 53,200 premature deaths, $608 billion in benefits. And aside from just that, if that's not convincing enough to you, what we would get if we were to decarbonize, they expect 25,600 avoided non-fatal heart attacks, 5,000 asthma-related emergency room visits, and 3.68 million days of work lost. Now, this is huge in terms of the human toll. Those lives lost have ripple effects. These are horrific tragedies. But maybe like companies, maybe big business can look into this. It seems like you could save a bunch of money if you were to prioritize decarbonizing, even for your own selfish reasons. JR, what do you think?
I'm trying to imagine a world when this happens. I've thought before, it's been recent. I guess it's as we're getting older. But I'm like, I'd like to see the day when actually we understand that humans are worth legislating to help live longer or survive or benefit or thrive even. And things like this would make that happen, right? Like we'd save that much money, so many more work hours, so many more healthy people. People probably life expectancy would get longer just in general. Those things are good for human experience and human existence, but they're not good for as much money making or as much as thwarting people's ability to get further. The way our structure is, at least in this country, is it's good to have these folks who have enough people that has to be a significant majority that just don't, so that they have to continue to fight and climb over each other in order to get to that potential aspirational goal of being one of the have that can control things. But if we have too many people that have opportunity, that aren't stressed, that aren't sick, that don't have to take that minimum wage job, I don't have to do it. We might actually get people that work at McDonald's the way the Republicans describe them as 16-year-olds, which is absolutely not the case. Then we'll have too many people that are doing well. And then the folks that are doing well that are lording over all the rest of us just won't feel the same. It just doesn't work out. So I don't think that they miss that this would be a benefit to society. They just don't want it to be a benefit to society. So I mean, I guess the human interactions or the human's propensity to do horrible things would have to change. I just don't see that happening.
Yeah, and the issue is,
call me the pessimist.
I actually will. Although I'm feeling a bit of it now too. But we're gonna stick with this for a bit. So, like, the people who would benefit the most by making this transition are the people with the least power to actually force it to actually happen. Those who have the ability to do it are going to necessarily find that hypothetical future less appealing because they're already prospering already. They're already doing better. They have health insurance. They can go live in the mountains or something like that, vacation somewhere where they'll feel healthy or whatever. They're going to be protected. And that is really the issue. That is why the government is supposed to get involved in these sorts of cases. You are not going to have industry until the economic case is indisputable. They're not going to willingly do this if there are any costs associated with it. Now, we are every year moving closer and closer to that point where cleaner generation of energy and all that is cost competitive with all of it. It's already in a lot of parts of the world better than something like coal specifically. But we can't necessarily wait that long. 50,000 lives a year being lost should be unacceptable. But unfortunately, the people with power right now don't consider it to be, because they apparently don't think that they're the ones that are actually losing those lives. And I want to go.
Sorry.
No. Continue.
We just lost 1 million lives from COVID, and that number is still going. 100%. How much do they care about that? How much have we even memorialized that? I'm not sure if they have. Maybe they have, and I missed it because we've been talking about election stuff so much and everything else is happening with politics. But
no,
that's a threshold. And do we care? I mean, we've almost set the precedent now. So if we begin to care about American and human lives in general across the world, it wouldn't match up with the way we've been acting lately. So it would almost be taken aback and go, why is he doing this? We don't care about human life. 50,000. Come on.
Yeah. And by the way, like, it isn't just that the wealthy CEOs and the 1% don't care. They don't. They've convinced us not to. Like, the vast majority of people who don't give a damn about 1 million people having died of COVID are not wealthy people. They have become active, enthusiastic participants in their own slaughter when it comes to COVID. And also, it's not like regular conservatives are losing their minds about pollution, pushing for decarbonization for the economic and public health benefits. They're not. Like, when we criticize wealthy people, like when I criticize Elon Musk or whatever, like, every day I go up against the cultists. These are regular people, as beaten down economically as anyone, that have been convinced that no, these are our heroes. They will save us. They actually have our best interests at heart. If I tweet nice things at them, they will lift me up like Charlie in the Chocolate Factory and make me rich too. They really do seem to believe this. And we need to get through to people that these are not our allies. At the very least, the vast majority are not. Now, really fast, I want to jump to one other aspect of this super quickly in terms of worldwide deaths due to pollution. We're talking about the effects inside the United States, but we're just one country. Worldwide, new study shows pollution is killing 9 million people a year. It's responsible for 1 in 6 deaths of all deaths worldwide. It dwarfs road traffic deaths, HIV, AIDS, malaria, tuberculosis, drug and alcohol misuse. The economic impact is $4.6 trillion or $9 million every minute. And I remember we talked about this years ago, one of the estimates of pollution deaths. It was at 6 million. Like, while I've been doing this thing, we're losing millions of people from something that is 100% needless. And there's really no campaign to stop it. So remember, like, doing everything we can to fight climate change, super important. But protecting the environment is not just about overall climate change and heating. This pollution is damaging its own right. I apologize, JR. We'll have more time for you on the other side, but we're unfortunately out of time. Thank you, everyone on our linear platforms and podcast for listening. If you're on Twitch, YouTube, many other platforms, we do have more news to get to, including some fun stuff. So don't go anywhere. JR and I will be back after this. Zane the Magic Puffer Dragon has been a tier 3 member for 18 months. Says, woohoo, Dragon Daddy, back in town with Webby in hand. Well, I don't have it yet. They're going to mail it. Pitchforks Dragon says, show us the Webby Stubble Daddy. We need a TYT primetime show. Jesus. Anyway, yes, they've been pushing for Brett to do a primetime show. Brett already works literally all day. He's probably watching this right now. He'll die. He will literally die.
Can I call you Stubble Daddy too?
No, you can. It's no longer a thing. Big News Wednesday is done. We had a nice run for 2 weeks. At one point, they award an award for social activism to Laverne Cox, which is awesome. Laverne Cox does great work, gets the award. Then I'm sitting there and somebody walks by and then taps me on the shoulder. It's Laverne Cox, who says, "Love the show. I watch the Damage Report every day." And then just kept walking. And I was like, "Thanks." I had no idea what to say. How awesome is that? That was so nice.
That's extremely
so nice.
Hey, I followed Drew Barrymore on Twitter, and she tweeted out, "Saw John Iadarola at the Webbies over the weekend." So excited.
That makes no sense.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Iadarola. I'll see you soon.